This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh, and welcome to Pressing Matters, a show where we get behind the headlines and speak to journalists and editors on the stories they write. This is the last Pressing Matters show of the year, so we will be highlighting memorable conversations we've had throughout this year. Today, we're showcasing four interviews. First, contributing editor for New Mandela, Kian Wong. Second, Dato' Wong Sai Wan, editor-in-chief of the Malay Mail. Third, independent business analyst P. Gunasegaram. And finally, Cindy Yap, senior editor at The Edge. In case you miss any of these interviews, you can listen to them in full on the BFM app, available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. The biggest story this year is, of course, the general elections, also known as GE14, that happened in May. The results of the May 9th elections saw the Pakatan Harapan coalition beating Barisan Nasional, taking the driving seat of Malaysia as our new government in power. GE14 will definitely go into the history books of Malaysia, and it was full of drama that led to plenty of stories to tell. Just before the elections ended, Shirat Kutin and Kusu Chuang spoke to contributing editor for New Mandela, Kian Wong, who shared his experience being on the ground speaking to voters from various constituencies.
I think one thing that has struck me between, I guess, going into the interiors of Johor and Perak and through Selangor is that there is a very quiet anger, resentment, what some Malay friends call meluat, as in they've had enough. The question is, who's directing the anger where? And will anyone do anything about it?
Are you reading this right? I mean, it's just a matter of interpretation and about how you're taking in this information and processing it.
No.
Because this is a very subjective point of
true.
View.
True. I actually am saying this based on actually echoing what a few Ketua Cawangan UMNO that I know in both southern Perak and northern Johor were saying to me. And how, very interestingly, they all boil down to this issue of how all politics is local. They're fighting what they consider local battles to win the seats. So I think what was interesting, for instance, in Hishamuddin Hussein's Johor constituency of Sembrong, going through there, unlike the rest of Johor, as anyone who's been driving through Johor the last few days will notice, lots of, you know, the big posters of the Prime Minister putting his hands up, that famous one. But in Sembrong, not so much. Interestingly, Sembrong has got its own logo, its own flags. Even the campaign workers have their own H2O T-shirts. So it's totally local.
H2O
brand.
Is a reference to Hishamuddin Hussein
right.
On.
Yes, that's right. His own branding, his own attractive logo. It's a very local issue.
And distancing himself from his cousin.
One could say that.
Can I just ask you, because obviously when you cut your swath through the hinterland, Ken, you know, obviously you're not of the local ilk, and you also sound a bit different. Do you think, just possibly?
I speak Malay, you know.
But you don't sound Malay lah. I mean, you know.
I
want to ask you.
Give me a few more weeks. I could do the logat Johor.
No, can I just ask? Because the Asian personality is often a guarded and sometimes duplicit one, or multiplicit, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that they're telling you what they really feel, or do you think they're telling you what they are saying? They're saying what they're saying because of what you appear to be.
I would say both. I think the thing is, I think for most hopefully decent journalists, you would try and cross-check what you see and what you hear with various folks. And I have no reason to disbelieve these various UMNO middle managers, you could say, up and down the country. And I'm quite sure some of them don't talk to each other. So they all seem to be coming to similar conclusions. Just to give you an example, two nights ago in this Felda area outside Rau, you know, talking to this Pakcik Felda who'd been there since, he said, 63 or 65, 1965. I don't know when the Felda opened, a bit before that. And I asked him, you know, I kept persisting asking him, so what's the sentiment? What's the feeling out in many of these established Felda areas, which are now into their second, third generation of Felda settlers? Look pretty prosperous sort of kampong Felda. And, you know, he instead replied me with this, I guess, cute analogy, you know, a little story. He said, you know, you know, when we're out here, we like to plant trees, fruit trees, palm oil trees, whatever, and we love for them to grow up straight, you know, lots of things growing, and sometimes they do so well, they are overburdened with fruits, and all the branches and the leaves are all overburdened, overripe, falling over. So then I have to ask him, so what, is it time for a pruning, a maintenance job?
Listen, he sounds like, you know, this is like a scene out of Being There, and Chauncey Gardner,
know,
you know,
kind
of weighing in on American politics with these, you know, these metaphors. But okay, but what is the conclusion of all that?
Well, I asked
him. Read into that what you
no,
want.
No, exactly. Because I was saying to him, so, you know, give me the story here. Well, what's the story? And then so he said, you know, it's very hard to say. He winks at me and he walks off.
He winks at you.
Yeah, he winks at me. You know, what's that? What am I supposed to make of this?
That was Ken Wong, the contributing editor for New Mandela. One of the biggest factors that was said to have led Pakatan Harapan's victory in GE14 was, of course, the Tun M factor. That is Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, who headed the coalition and is now our new prime minister. In October, I caught up with Dato' Wong Sai Wan, editor-in-chief of the Malay Mail Group, who followed Tun M on his inaugural trip to the United States as the 7th prime minister of Malaysia. Sai Wan talks about the difference between Tun M's trip and the former prime minister Dato' Sri Najib Razak's trip there last year, which Sai Wan had followed as well. Well, last year, you followed Dato' Sri Najib Razak on his official work trip to the US as well. So you've been on press trips to the US with both prime ministers, Tun Dr. Mahathir and Dato' Sri Najib. What were the key differences between both trips?
Okay, I've been on press trips to the US with three prime ministers.
Okay.
Patlah, I went as well. Mm. But the key difference between these two is that we can't compare them fairly because one was a Najib's was an official visit at the official invitation of Trump to visit the US. This one, Mahathir went as the Prime Minister of Malaysia to deliver Malaysia's statement at the United Nations General Assembly. They're never called speeches, they're called statements because many leaders do not finish it on time and it's just considered delivered even you finish half the speech.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the basic difference is one, the host was different.
Yes.
Okay. Of course, in Najib's case, Donald Trump rolled up the red carpet, housed him in the most expensive hotel in Washington, and all his visits and his meetings were kind of like sanctioned by the Trump administration. This one was different. This one was purely planned by Wisma Putra and purely planned by the mission.
Okay, but, well, the host might be different, but what do you feel, the feel or the tone of the trips, the reception from what these prime ministers have been getting when they're on the ground, do you notice any differences from that?
What the similarity between the two trips is that between all our Malaysian leaders is they always visit a country, they meet the diaspora.
Mm.
The warmth for Mahathir when he met the diaspora was very genuine. The reception for Najib was very contrived. You know, you are forced to attend.
Mm.
You better attend. Whereas in Mahathir's case, many of these people who rushed their votes back to Malaysia wanted to meet the man. Okay? Mm. And he didn't disappoint them. He sat there on the chair for 2 hours to post pictures with them, to take all sorts of questions. But that is a basic difference.
Mm, okay. So it looks like he obviously still has the caliber and strength still, 2 hours to meet them. That's a long time.
But just like our handphones, at the end of the day, I think the battery level was very low for Mahathir.
That was Dato' Wong Sai Wan, editor-in-chief of the Malay Mail Group. In just a few minutes, we'll take a look at the significant business headlines that generated conversations in this show, such as the 1 trillion ringgit debt mountain and Budget 2019. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Good morning. If you just joined us, you're listening to Pressing Matters and I'm Joyce Goh. As we wrap up the year in our final Pressing Matters for 2018, we look back at some of the most significant conversations we've had with journalists and editors on some of their stories. One of the biggest stories this year was the revelation that the federal government's debt servicing obligations exceeded 1 trillion ringgit as uncovered by the finance ministry. P. Gunasekaram, independent business analyst and a regular here at Pressing Matters, breaks down the numbers for us.
I think you have to be clear about the numbers in a case like this. It is very important that the numbers are clearly stated, and which was done, I think, after Tun Mahathir and Lim Guan Eng had said that the total debt was over 1 trillion. It's not the total debt which is over 1 trillion. The federal government debt is still 686.8 billion, and this is indicated in the statement by Lim Guan Eng. You know? So it becomes 1.087 trillion after you include government guarantees and lease payments. You know, so if one looks at the table, there is official federal government debt of 686.8 billion. So the official federal government debt is that. Plus you add on government guarantees 199.1 billion and lease payments 201.4 billion to make it 1.087 trillion. While the official debt, federal government debt is 686.8 billion, I think it is fair to consider the government guarantees as well as lease payments as a means of looking at overall government repayments that he has to make over the years. That's fair enough. But the government guarantees have already been there, as I think Ong Kian Ming confirmed this to BFM, that this was something that the opposition had been highlighting to the government before.
Do you think that number was put out there basically in a kind of shock and awe, gesture in order to, one, cast aspersions on the administration of Najib Razak, two, to find or to give the Pakatan Harapan government some wiggle room so that they could adjust also public expectations about spending that might happen vis-a-vis the 100-day promises and the Pakatan manifesto?
Okay, it's pretty difficult to say, you know, but the 1 trillion figure should not come as a surprise to anybody who has been looking at federal government public sector debt situation. So in effectively, this was already available in the Treasury Economic Report. The new addition, as I mentioned earlier, was the public-private partnerships. So if you use the Treasury figures, if you include the non-financial public corporations, these are like Petronas and MRT Co. and all of these things, a mixture of good and bad companies, guarantees made to statutory bodies and so on, the total debt already comes up to 901 billion, not very far away from that 1 trillion. So this is table 4.9 in the Treasury Economic Report for 2017-2018. You know, and also if you look at the Accountant General's report, that figure, the figure for loans and guarantees is also there of about 187 billion. So the guarantee figure is already there in the public domain in the Accountant General's report. So I think the key thing here is the inclusion of the lease payments for public-private partnerships, which is 201.4 billion. So that is the problem here. And I think that needs to be desegregated to see how bad or how what exactly is the financial position for these things. I think one of the problems is doing away with GST, you know, because that is causing a revenue crunch, all right? And then plus on top of that, there is a promise to do away with tolls, you know? So that is going to be a lot of money as well. So I think what is happening is there is an attempt to lower the public expectations about what the government can do at this point in time. So that could be one of the underlying reasons for all of these things.
That was P. Gunasekaram, independent business analyst and a regular guest of our show. Another big story this year was Budget 2019. This is Pakatan Harapan's first budget as the federal government, and I spoke to Cindy Yap, senior editor at The Edge, who has been covering the national budget story for over a decade, and Cindy shares her insights and findings of the new government's budget.
I think the thing that we are happiest most is if you display wealth, you had better pay your taxes already.
That's right.
So, but I think this one, there is a clear emphasis on inclusive growth, and there is a clear intention to put more money in people's pockets, both by cash transfers and also higher minimum wage for the lower income group. But there's also this part on helping to reduce cost of housing, transport and food, because this is actually very important, because if most of the money for the people who have lower income, it goes to housing, mm-hmm. transport, and also food. So if the cost of these things actually come down, people have more money to spend every month. So, and when you have more money to spend, you have savings, you can spend on education. Mm-hmm. So people actually, you are able to move up the income chain. And that's very important today for upskilling. You need to ensure that you and I can still have our jobs, mm-hmm. right, in 10 years' time.
Well, Sunny, in your cover story in the Edweek, you said that the budget was not as bad as feared, in quotes. What do you mean by that?
I think there was fear on taxes and also fear that there will be a huge cutback on government spending, because there was this talk about austerity mode. The government did clarify a little bit beforehand that they are just spending very smartly. We are not in austerity mode, but people were still afraid on... Basically, there is a shortfall on swapping GST with SST. Mm-hmm. So there is a 20 billion gap. Whether or not it's actually 20 billion, that's we don't know. There is a gap to fill.
Yes.
And the measures in this budget, you would fill some of it, but well, there will be more. So we still need to do more, but it's a very good start. Mm-hmm. And I think the government's decision to actually give back the 37 billion owed in taxes to businesses and individuals, these are excess taxes owed to them. But imagine this 37 billion, if people are encouraged to invest it in the market. It's a very powerful, it can be potentially very powerful engine for the economy. Mm. Oh, well, if let's say your bosses get back money, they have a little bit more money to pay you more salaries, and people, when they're paid more, you are able to spend a little bit more. So that helps. I think every little bit helps.
Yeah, you've actually covered the Malaysia's budgets for over a decade now. How different was this budget 2019 from the previous ones?
I think it's also a little bit unfair to compare it entirely, because this one, there is an emphasis on, because here there is we have this 1 trillion debt issue. Mm. Previously, it was not a worry, so to speak. Mm. So it was not previously addressed. But this one, can see the new government, they're talking openly about it, how it's being controlled. People are happy that it's being tackled. The government has promised that they will not borrow unnecessarily, mm-hmm. only where necessary. Government guarantees will only be given to things that will pay for the economy. So in that sense, it's good. And of course, they reset the budget deficit, a fiscal consolidation route. Mm-hmm. So I think these are things that investors, rating agencies, they are concerned about. And it's great that it's being emphasized. And of course, this time, it's basically the government promising that they will do things right again. Okay. There will be transparency, and so we'll hold them to their promise. Yeah.
You also wrote a story entitled Consumption Boost of 37 Billion Ringgit, the best one-off item in budget 2019. Why do you think that's the best one-off item?
Okay, remember the money that our finance minister said was missing, you know, from GST refunds and also property. That's basically what the 37 million is. I think we mentioned just now. And
it's because it rolls over the consumption.
Correct.
It could have a multiplier effect.
Yes, correct.
So you think that's the best one-off item.
Because previously we thought the government guided that it would be gradually return, but this time it seems that they've gotten money to give you back one shot, so it can be potentially powerful. Mm. Cross our fingers, yeah.
Well, the government did announce its largest ever allocation of 314.5 billion ringgit. It is the largest compared with the last two federal budgets. So about 260 billion ringgit will be allocated as operating expenditure, and some about 55 billion ringgit will be allocated as development expenditure. Was this surprising?
Yes and no, because of course this budget, there are a lot of one-offs. The main reason it is this big is because there is this additional 37 billion on expenses it's basically money being returned to the people. And you have the extra 30 billion of special dividends from Petronas. Petronas was already giving some dividends, I think about 20 odd billion, and adding to that would be like 50 over billion. Mm. So that actually makes the budget a lot larger than previous years. Yeah.
Okay. What were analysts expecting when it comes to the impact of this on the market?
I think people were talking already about potential consumption boost. It's just that because we expected it to be gradual rather than a one-off, the potential of the consumption boost was a bit more uncertain. So now we have a figure, 37 billion. Mm. So we are hopeful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, is that a concern? Because the 30 billion ringgit from Petronas and the government raising samurai bonds, what's the reaction from analysts, you know, when you speak to them? Are they concerned?
Okay, I think the samurai bonds isn't really new debt. I mean, this is from what we understand. Most of the money that's being borrowed is to retire existing government debt that probably some of it, the debt cost, the borrowing cost of those debt, I think some of the 1MDB bonds, for instance, 6% yield. So it's basically swapping more expensive debt with cheaper debt. So I think that's one way of looking at it. Mm. But of course, we have to monitor what actually happens. And yeah.
That was Cindy Yap, Senior Editor at The Edge. Again, if you've missed any of these interviews, you can listen to them in full on the BFM app, available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. I'm Joyce Gore, signing off for The Morning Run. We've got a 10 o'clock bulletin coming up and then Enterprise. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.